welcome to episode 22 of Destroy Before Listening, which is a conversation between myself, Pete Byrne, and Neil Turpin. This is the second part of the conversation with lifelong drummer Neil, which brings things up to date with his new band, Objections, who will have a recording out this year. The past 20 years are the focus here, so the contrast between more session-based playing with him, Enablers, and Jan Tiersen against personal work is explored. Please listen to the first part in episode 21 if you want the full background on what happened in the 90s regarding his formative bands like Bilge Pump, Solanke, and Baby Harp Seal, etc. Please rate, review, subscribe, and share to anyone who may be interested. Please follow on Instagram at Destroy Before Listening. Thanks. Entering into the kind of 2000s, you become more of a session drummer almost for bands or people that maybe need a replacement, or they need someone to help them out as a
drummer. It looks that way, but it definitely wasn't that way.
No, okay.
Because it was always only people that I knew and friends, and like at that point I don't think I'd done any sort of stuff with people that I didn't know. You know, it was all just like I'm joining the band, so it wasn't like being a hired gun for a set period of time. That did happen, but that came later. But I think up to 2000, I was just a legit member of the band for whatever period of time. Bands just came and went really fast. I don't know why. That's just what was happening. And some of them were documented and some of them weren't. And there was just a lot of it going on. I just really enjoyed like being really fully immersed in playing music with loads of different people. At the end of 2000, I did get like something that was a bit more like being a session drummer. But again, it was joining the band to like do a tour. And that was it with him, the Chicago band. I'd met the people in that band previously when they were over touring. They were a mixture of like members of Juno 44, Hoover, and the Sorts, and the Boom. So one way or another, all these bands that we've been chatting about from Leeds had ended up playing on the same bill as those sort of Chicago bands that ended up becoming him. They were looking for a drummer. They had two drummers. Doug Sharon was the main guy. He always had a second drummer. For whatever reason, the drummer they had, it didn't work out. So they needed a drummer to like do a tour in Europe. So that was really the first time that I'd ever been asked to do something outside of the whole Leeds setup. It was all like a known quantity up to that point. And then this was like really just getting into something that was new and on a bigger scale as well, actually, because more people knew about them as a band. You know, they had better organization, like long 5 weeks in Europe and a few days rehearsing in London. It seemed like all to be happening on a bit of a different scale.
I know you'd mentioned as well about doing Enablers. I don't know much about that. If you want to explain maybe more about the band, because I know they like there's recordings for, it's Neurot, isn't it? The Neurosis label.
Yeah, that's right.
Label.
Yeah.
That's all I know.
Okay, yeah. That came a few years later. I got involved with them in 2005, sounds about right. That came about because after I'd been playing in HIM, we did a UK tour and then we did a US tour the next year. At the end of that tour, we recorded an album in San Francisco, Pig's Head Studio. And the guy that run that was Joe Goldring. He was a Brit, actually, but he'd been over there for years. I don't know if Enablers existed at the time, but in 2005, so like 4 years later, I saw that they were playing and I saw that Joe Goldring was a member. So just went down to the gig in Leeds to see them. And it was like at this venue called Joseph's Well. There's no one there, you know, it was a bit of a sorry affair, really. But like the people were there really got into what was happening. They didn't have anywhere to stay. It was all like kind of, it seemed really shit. I don't know who organized the gig. It was just like a promoter who didn't give a fuck, you know, just on a sort of rota rather than someone who had something invested in it. So they ended up coming back to our house and staying over and, you know, we fed them, gave them breakfast. We just kind of landed in the right place and I sort of reconnected with Joe. And, you know, and that was that. That was it. It was like, it was really great and really nice to sort of meet them and see them play and all that. And then out of the blue, when they were touring again, they needed a drummer. So I think it was my friend Lisa Labrie, who suggested me to them. And then they were just like, they asked me to do it. That was the second time that I'd done that kind of session-y sort of touring thing. So I went around Europe for a few weeks with them, maybe like 3 weeks. But I mean, doing that stuff, I kind of like it because it forces me to learn other people's songs. And both him and Enablers, their music's pretty complex. Enablers especially, it's very sort of like involved, sort of proggy in its time signatures and changes and the length of the songs. All the vocabulary was stuff I was familiar with because it's, you know, in a broad sense, it's kind of post-rock, but with a real emphasis on the vocals and the words. So I was into it, you know, it was kind of like what I was into. I like, you know, obviously liked it. I wouldn't have done it if I didn't. And that goes for everything really that I've been involved in. That was another great opportunity to just kind of like go on tour. And it was just like, yeah, and you'll get an equal share of, you know, whatever we make on the tour. So I was just like treated fairly and respectfully. And, I, you know, that's really great when you're kind of putting yourself into something like that.
Another thing I don't really know much about is the, with that kind of idea of just being hired or whatever, or being a, more of a session or doing session work as opposed to a band that you sort of more invested in a way. They're like two separate things, aren't they? I don't know how necessarily they relate or how the relation is in your brain or how you like kind of portion out.
In terms of getting involved in him, I was just absolutely blown away that people that had played in bands that I, you know, that I thought were just great and people who were, who I, you know, had up on a pedestal as being really, really good musicians.
Yeah.
It was just really nice to be invited to like be amongst them. I didn't feel any particular like, they was going to pay for travel and like give you a share of the, you know, at the end of the tour and stuff like that. That was just fucking great. But I didn't feel particularly uninvested in the music. You know, it was the opposite. I felt invested in it because of how much I respected them. And same with Enablers as well. I felt invested in it in the same sense because the music was just kind of like, it was all about the music, you know. And even if you had a kind of like exhausting, tedious day traveling or, you know, and whatever, and there's, you know, just like all those creature comforts that you kind of forget about when you're on tour that can really grind you down. At the end of the day, if you had a really good gig, kind of made up for it all. I wasn't thinking, oh, well, you know, this is fucking shit, but I'm going to get paid for it so I can deal with it. You know what I mean? Yeah, it wasn't like that. Yeah. It was just like, I felt as invested as they did in the music.
More recently, I suppose, or like in the past 10, 15 years, is Quack Quack and Felix as well. And are those both like original or setups, or like you have a concept or an idea as a set of people that you want to try and do as a band and like put forth? Like present that way.
Quack Quack was a definite attempt on my part to just do something new with people that I hadn't played with before, but who I've met through the music scene, and just kind of point the music in a new direction that I hadn't really explored before as well. And I think at the time I was just like overflowing with ideas in terms of drumming. So I had more ideas than the bands I was in, which at the time would have been Bilge Pump and Polaris. Polaris was really in a super low gear at the time, and Bilge Pump was really just kind of finding its, you know, it was really set in its identity, and certain things that I come up with just, you know, wouldn't really fit the bill. So quite, I asked, you know, Moz and Stu, the other guys, I just asked them if they wanted to do a band, and they were just like, yeah, you know, and I had a bunch of ideas, rhythm ideas that we sort of could get the ball rolling with, and it just went from there, and it was nice to just get into something really fresh. And then, you know, you can kind of decide how you run the band as well, you know, just like how you organize going on tour. And it was cool just to like have a kind of a clean slate to kind of invent your, you know, create how you're going to sort of work and do things. So that was really cool. We played about 150 gigs in a short period of time. Yeah, made an album and an EP and a 7-inch. First gig would have been somewhere in Leeds in a pub. I think it was the Pack Horse. And then the last gig is actually after we'd stopped playing as a band, you know, but not officially. But we got asked to open for Ginger Baker at the Brudenell Social Club. So it was one of those offers you couldn't really turn down. So we brushed off the cobwebs and played with Ginger Baker. So, you know, that was great. It was good to get the opportunity to do that.
That's one of my favorite music documentaries, that Beware Mr. Baker. Fantastic. That it's just fantastic.
Yeah, what a character. Just,
yeah, I mean, fuck.
He's a kind of, I don't know, strange. He was a strange, perhaps obnoxious man, but a legend as well. So yeah, that was a nice way to tie up the quack thing anyway. But you mentioned Felix. Felix was, it's not a band anymore, but Lucinda, who was the sort of, she was a songwriter. It was her band really. And so she had Chris Summerlin on guitar and Elv, and Chris and Elv were in Lords. Elv moved to Ireland. And then when Felix were doing another album, Lucinda asked me if I wanted to do it. So that was just a kind of, just come and play drums on our album. It wasn't really session work, but I wasn't really a member of the band. It was kind of like, it's fuzzy, you know, but it's just, it's, I guess it's so informal the way that it works that you don't really think of it. Saying it's like session work somehow formalizes it into this kind of, or professionalizes it in some way. It makes it sound grander than it really is. Because all you're really doing, all that really happens is it's like, somebody asks you, you know, you get an email and do you want to play drums on our record? You know, we'll send you an example. And you're just like, yeah, okay, that sounds all right. You know, that's what happened with Felix. And we did play, played a few gigs as well, actually.
Kosmische Laufe. If just to explain, I suppose, because it's another thing that I'm like trying to get a, educate myself on, like, what the fuck, like try and get a timeline and then like what are these bands, because they're kind of like, there's not much information unless you were, I guess, around and you saw this stuff, then you'd have an idea. But if you don't, it's kind of, you know, it's lost at this point, I think.
Yeah, Kosmische Laufe is it's kind of like a concept. I'm not sure if I could give it away, because it's Kosmische Laufe is shrouded
it's mystery, isn't it?
Yeah. So I don't think it's the done thing to reveal any secrets there.
No.
But the music.
No,
is...
not even that you drum on it, or.
Oh, that's okay. Yeah, but the concept of the.
Do you want to own up to the drumming?
I don't know if I should.
Or the concept of like the krautrock drumming or something.
Kosmische Laufe is like the unearthed archive of an East German composer who wrote music in the 70s for the East German Olympic team to train to. That's the concept in a nutshell.
It's alleged that you play drums, maybe.
But my connection to Kosmische Laufe came through playing with Jan Tiersen. So that Kosmische Laufe recording is a live recording when Jan and his band, which I was part of, we just played a set of Kosmische Laufe music. That became that album, and Kosmische Laufe, you know, done loads of other albums as well.
Okay. But
yeah, it's very much in the kind of German 70s krautrock kind of vein.
I mean, yeah, I don't have to include that if it's going to incriminate anything. Anybody.
No, I didn't give anything away. It's fine.
No, you just bringing it to, you know, more recent times is like your current group, Objections.
That's Joe from Bilge Pump and on guitar, and Claire from Beards and Nape Neck on bass and singing. That came about because Emlyn decided he wanted a break from Bilge Pump. So, you know, lockdown obviously stopped everything. And Bilge Pump were kind of on a high, actually, in 2019, going into 2020, because we put out a record and people noticed it, and we got some nice gigs out of it and some radio time and stuff. So that was pretty cool. It was a good buzz for Bilge Pump. But Emlyn wanted to take time out from it. So when it came to bands being able to be bands again and play once the lockdown restrictions eased, you know, we checked in with him, and he was just like, yeah, just do what, you know, go and do something new kind of thing. I'm just like taking time out. So Joe asked me if I wanted to do something, and I said, yeah. And then he said, like, you know, let's ask Claire as well. So I was like, yeah, super cool. You know, on paper, we were just like all into the idea of making a new band. And then when we were allowed to just be in a practice room again, we just met up and just started jamming. We had a few ideas, which were sort of a sort of ragtag of things that Bilge Pump had been toying around with at the end of like 2019. So that was our start point. But since then, we've just been jamming and coming up with like completely fresh stuff. You know, we've done 7 gigs so far and we've written a bunch of songs. We've got like a half hour set. We're due to do some recording with Mark Sims, actually. So, you know, keeping it all in the family.
Yeah.
So that's really exciting. You know, I was bummed that Bilge Pump was not going to be a band anymore, because having been in it for 25 years and then to not be in it, it felt like a loss. And it was kind of like a weird feeling to just think, fuck, you know, that's not there anymore. This thing that sort of was like reliably constant throughout all these other, you know, throughout all these other bands that we've been talking about and all this other music, like there was this one constant and that was it. And then it's sort of, you know, not necessarily over, but not necessarily like going to be starting again in a hurry. It was kind of like weird to deal with that. But now that we've started Objections, it feels like it was the right thing, because it's fucking great just to be in a new band and like have a different dynamic. And like a different approach. And it's just like a buzz to just kind of start something where we've all got like an equal stake and just like from scratch. But we've all got a super long history of other bands that we've played in as well. So I don't know. It's just like a really nice, fun thing to be getting into and kind of like, you know, starting from the start with. What motivates me to keep doing it and want to do it? That's a really good question. I think it's just the kind of newness of playing with different people and experiencing music in different ways in terms of how you operate as a group or how you operate in the recording studio or how you learn songs, whether it's like collectively or somebody's written something and then you have to learn their song remotely and turn up and play it. And, you know, different ways of going on tour, whether it's like in the back of a transit van sitting on the amps and then, you know, crashing on somebody's floor, or whether you've sort of like hit the jackpot for a bit and you're on a tour bus or hotels. That's what keeps it interesting, is just like the different ways to experience it and also what playing with different people brings out of you as a musician as well, because you don't always play the same way. It's dictated by what other people are playing and what you're hearing, you're listening and contributing. So keeping it varied is key, I think. I think that's what keeps it interesting, keeping it varied. And I think in a way, it's what makes up for not being in a band that's ever been kind of like committed to doing it full time. And the only way to do that is to like spread it far and wide and play with loads of different people. It is the sort of just the outcome of not being in a band that's just been about, you know, practicing 4 or 5 times a week and fucking off having a career and just like really like 100% throwing yourself into music. Amazingly, people kind of just pop up and ask me to do stuff and I love it, you know. So it's great because it keeps me busy, keeps my head in it. You know, I like having my head in, like having to learn something new. The most recent thing I've done is I recorded drums for a new band, All Structures Align. So it was just nice to be asked to do that. And there was a really sort of short turnaround from when they asked me to do it to actually recording the drums. So it was kind of nice to have a deadline and to be sort of be a little bit stressed by it, but in a good way.
Yeah. Two things that are, whether they're opposites really completely, in terms of like, one is you're drumming for someone else, that person being Jan Tiersen, and then doing the kind of full production yourself with regard to like drumming, recording, instrumentation, whatever, or like composition. So you got the complete opposite things that you do now.
I think that's a good observation, that they are kind of opposites. And also those two projects are really kind of like quite far removed from all the other bands that we're talking about, which are all pretty much like under the umbrella of like DIY. Whereas I played for Jan Tiersen for 5 years, and that was like, that was a whole different way of doing things, because, you know, I had to go to Brittany and audition. That was something I'd never done before. It was, you know, these are people that are serious about music. They're not fucking around. You know, they'll sort of buy you a ticket and say, come and audition. You're going to stay for 3 days. And like, if it works out, you're going to stay for 3 days and learn the set. And it's kind of like intense on all levels to kind of be thrown into that. But again, it was like, okay, this seems like a pretty amazing opportunity that's just come out of the blue. And I don't know anybody involved as well. So that's the other thing. It was kind of like, it wasn't connected. Later, I found out what the connection was. And the guitarist in that band, Jan's band at the time, he'd seen Bilgepunkt playing in Bristol and he remembered me as a drummer. So my name went in the hat, you know. So it was okay. The Bilgepunkt connection.
Okay, yeah.
But it was kind of quite a few steps removed from it being, you know, like a something more direct. That was like the only time in my life when I'd been able to just live off playing drums. So for 5 years, I was on tour and we made a record as well. And, you know, paid the bills, paid the rent, and I didn't have to worry about money for 5 years of life because I was just playing the drums. So that in itself was pretty fucking remarkable. And yeah, getting to see like so much of the world that I wouldn't have seen otherwise was also just totally amazing. Touring all over, everywhere, like crazy places like Russia and China, and Australia, US, you know, all over Europe and like South America as well, and Canada. It's just, yeah. It's fucking
wild.
totally fucking amazing experience.
Yeah.
And again, just to like experience music in a different way and see how it operates on that level when there's like crew, tour manager, bus driver, you know, it's like, it's a big operation. But at the end of the day, it's still just a band on a stage. So like once I settled into it, I was comfortable with it. You know, it's just like, it had to be good. It had to be really fucking good, and it couldn't be sloppy musically. So I like that. I like the fact that I kind of, something kicked in terms of like, okay, I've got to act professionally or something like, okay, just don't fuck this up. Just like turn up on time and like practice the crap out of what you need to do so you know it backwards, and just be like, so you can just be reliable and as a musician and just sort of, because I guess in a setup like that, it's like a drummer's role is kind of like pretty, it's kind of, what is it? Everybody's got to trust that you know what you're doing so they can rely on you. Because if you fuck up, then you're going to make them all sound bad. You know, if a guitarist hits a bum note, it's like, it's fine, you know, because the rest of the band is still kind of like in the pocket or whatever.
Yeah.
If the drummer slips up, like the whole fucking ship goes down. You know what I mean? It's like the most disorientating thing for the listener to just be like, oh, my, you know, to have that sort of assured sense of rhythm just kind of like drop out or fuck up in some way.
Yeah.
It's disturbing. So that, you know, the drummer's got all the responsibility in that sense.
Yeah. So that the contrast was the you being the entirely self-reliant solo stuff you'd done.
Yeah, okay, yeah, the solo stuff. I mean, that was totally just like born out of circumstances of the pandemic and just having so much time and having isolation, you know, I live on my own with a cat, just got all the time, all the space, no other responsibilities really. You know, I just had to can, well, all my teaching and playing was just, you know, completely just canned straight away. So I had to go and like, I had to sign up for Universal Credit and just like, you know, fall into that safety net of benefits and just sat there. Once it came in and I could pay the rent and like eat and everything, pay the bills, it was like, okay, well, it's just a fucking, you know, it's like this complete like open, wide time and sort of like energy thing where I can do whatever I want. So I just thought, fuck it, I'm going to learn how to like do home recordings, which I've never done before. I had a four track tape player when I was a teenager. Since then, you know, this is 30 years later. So I had to start from scratch figuring out, well, I got my friend who knows what he's doing to just like give me little tutorials on Skype, you know, so he talked me through. I'd look, you know, just starting from scratch, you just like, God, it's so fucking bamboozling getting your head around like a digital audio workstation. For so long, I just avoided it because I just felt like a certain kind of Luddite quality that kind of, I don't know, it's weird. But anyway, I got over it and got my head around it. And then, yeah, just got really into writing songs. And the approach was just to write straight songs, verse, chorus, you know, middle eight, just nothing fancy. I just wanted to do that because a lot of music that I listen to is like that. You know, I just really love like Leonard Cohen and Bill Callahan and stuff like that. So I guess they were the touchstones for that stuff. And it was an excuse to try and like get better on guitar and think about music in a different way and think about it in terms of melody more than rhythm. So the song, yeah, the approach to the songs were just kind of like the guitar and singing in terms of like creating a structure and figuring out what's going to happen. So completely different, you know, massive role reversal for me. But I suppose in you know, looking at it in a wider sense, it was just another way to experience music. And I've always had a guitar kicking around, but I've never been any good at playing it. And I'm still no good at playing it. But I had kind of a couple of years to just play it and play it and play it. So I made like a sort of tiny, tiny kind of inroad into sort of sounding more competent. It was actually really cool to, once I'd kind of got my setup together, got a few mics and knew what I was doing and it kind of like was making sense and I wasn't bumbling around and fucking it up. It was really a nice process to be in and just be so immersed in coming to each instrument separately, like the bass as well. It was really, really fun to just play bass lines and then be like my own session drummer, you know, approaching the song with like what was necessary for the song, not really in kind of like any other way. I don't know, something I just got out of my system, I suppose, and something I could do on my own in the absence of being able to play music with anyone else. I made two albums and put them out on tape as well and made a Bandcamp page. It's kind of nice to kind of like go through that little process as well.
Well, let's see your DIY thing. I know like a while back you'd mentioned about like wanting to do a 7-inch or release something. So like now's the kind of point where you take those ideas and things or tools that you've picked up, you know, work within that kind of frame of things. But I suppose it's completely different now. It's digital almost, or well, it is, everything's digital but analog at the same time because there's a tape, isn't it?
Yeah, that's it. I mean, tape, I know what you mean. Download code, so it's sort of like I'm still attached to the idea of like music having a physical form. That makes it more real for me. There's something more fun and kind of like real about, you know, vinyl or tape or whatever. Maybe not. CDs are shit, so I wouldn't want to do a CD, but
no.
But yeah, you're right. It was just like collecting together, like I suppose a few decades worth of like kind of stuff that's rubbed off on me, not feeling any particular barrier to just doing it without asking anyone's permission, you know. Just, so yeah, totally the DIY kind of attitude.
Sooner or later. to you, indifferent to me.